So CMSs are kind of near and dear to my heart, mostly because I'm a techie, although I'm going to try not to talk about anything too techie today. And since I'm a techie, it means that I invariably built my own way back in the day, and it had all kinds of problems, and now we're on to other people's stuff. But as many of you have gone through, I'm sure, you've gone through selection processes, but over the years, I observed a certain lack of, from my perspective, a certain lack of rigor in how people in Cornell as an organization or HyatWeb in general approach the evaluation process. And I know there's a couple other sessions that have been on, and people have talked about this over the years, but I think the way that I'm going to frame this today hopefully provides a nugget, like Doug said, that you can use to take back and frame your own evaluation of either a new system or an old one. So what we'll discuss today is a framework. It's not a meat grinder style methodology. That is, you're not going to put a bunch of crap in the top and grind it, and then out comes an answer. It's more a way of how to think about the problem at hand. I see a lot of vendor friends here. I'm hoping that they'll stand up and cheer and say, you know, this is exactly what we'd like our customers to do, because when they do that, they'll come to a conclusion that our product is how you should proceed. Really, it's intended to help you keep track of the questions that you've asked and making sure you're asking all the people that should be asked and that you haven't missed anything. So we're going to talk about three models of how to look at a content management system. We'll get to these in a little bit. And four lenses. In other words, four different types of folks that are going to be using or interacting with or somehow involved more or less in this process. And talk about some little bit of vocabulary. Here are some things that I'm not going to discuss. I'm not going to pass judgment on products, except maybe ones I've written. Some will probably get named. I'm not going to talk about any science, computer science or otherwise. This is the APS track, not the technical track, after all. I'm also not going to talk about how to do a very detailed technical analysis of these products, because A, that would be outside the scope of this forum, and B, it's tends to be widely varied. So for today, what is a CMS in the context of this conversation? It's a piece of software or a collection of pieces of software that work in concert to be employed for the purpose of executing a communication strategy on the web by producing one or more websites or related artifacts. Now, that's a big mouthful, but essentially it means for some people, this can be a product that they go to use edit websites. For some people, it could be a product that goes to house their news collection or keep track of their events or whatever. The term is fairly broad. What assumptions for this today? Basic understanding of these terms. You don't actually need to know any details about them. You just need to know that CSS is a language that's used to describe design on the web, and that HTML is the defined structure. Really, that's actually about it. You don't really need to know much, I hope. And you should feel free to stop me, because I am a technical person, which means I can get my mouth running on technical topics and go on and on and on. So please feel free to raise your hand and say, no, that's way too deep, because you think it's out of scope for this. Second, please feel free to ask questions. What we're going to do is going to go through this framework description, and then we're going to have a discussion about it. So I'd say about 20 minutes or so, we'll be into a point where we can start looking at different features or properties of systems and talk about how to describe them in terms of this framework. So it's going to be interactive. Come up, use the microphone because these are being recorded, or not, and I'll repeat your question. So these products, which I'm sure most of you know by now, but maybe not, are not all created equally because, well, they all take content, whatever that means, text, images, pulling from other websites in automated manners, you know, takes something and produces websites. But the way they approach doing that, meaning the storage of that information, the retrieval of it, aggregating it together, how you manipulate it using the system, all that, it's all approached very differently or similarly, perhaps, between different products. So the software architecture and design decisions that got made, either explicitly or implicitly through the creation of that product, affect how you use them as tools to achieve your goals. And we'll talk a little bit, we'll give a little bit of structure to that a little bit later. But these effects are both positive and negative from your individual perspective, depending on what your needs are. Sure, over the years, you know, people have made great things that work for everyone for one small niche, but they don't work for everybody else and what they're doing. What does CMSDK mean? It's kind of a play on something that comes up in the software development world. So SDK stands for Software Development Kit, and the term just popped into my mind. And I said, well, maybe it's a decision kit. So a content management system decision kit, or maybe a discussion kit, because it's really about getting people talking about what their actual needs are and how the product achieves those needs. For a lot of people, it might be don't care. I'm sure that you all don't fall into that category today, of course. So, three models. The first model I'm going to describe is a model I call the web ecosystem model. And that is, you have this product that sits in the center of things on the left, like templates or CSS or manual content entry or photography. And it all consumes into this product, and then the product outputs things like pages, sites, applications. And then there's this arrow where it feeds back into itself. Because many times, you will have content that gets produced by one part of the CMS that gets consumed by another part. For instance, you might have an events calendar that gets displayed on multiple pages. These models that we're talking about are ways to think about this product so you can ask questions about it. For instance, if you saw a product that says, we do RSS, you might think about it in terms of this ecosystem of pulling items from separate pages and then producing an RSS feed. The second model is what I call the software stack model. I'm sure you've all seen these pictures. I'm going to go through a couple of them here. So you imagine that at the bottom you've got the server hardware, and then a little bit above that you've got some storage or software, and then above that you've got tools. So this would be a software stack describing something like Dreamweaver and Contribute. You know, there's no intermediary content management system software in the middle. It's writing directly to the file system. You know, you get your IT administrator set up a share, and everybody gets to go in and edit stuff. It's still producing web content. It's still producing websites. So you might call it a CMS. But it's, when you look at it as a stack of software, it's much less rich than a lot of the full products out there, like this one. You might have a couple of APIs stuffed in there so that one system holds all of your content information in some sort of representation that's useful for it, and then editing and publishing sits on top of that. Or maybe you've got a system over here which also exposes an API out the top. In other words, you can write software that interacts with this content management system software. So you can imagine that different products like Contribute and Dreamweaver are ones that you know, maybe you wouldn't be able to write a piece of software to work with. But another one, I'll name open source products, just so we don't, play favorites. Something like Drupal or something like that might be one that is built out so that you can write a piece of software that creates content and it interacts with it. Or you might have a model that looks like that, which is where you've got all these features on the top. You know, you can edit, you can publish, you have an API so you can write software that interacts with it. And then you, from the customer's perspective, don't care about what's underneath because it's hosted in the cloud. So you don't have to worry about server software and whatever. So from your perspective, a software stack looks like that for that particular product. The third model is probably the simplest one. It's the skills required model. When I'm looking at this feature, does it require a lot of specialized skills to work with it or not? Related but not identical, complex versus simple feature capabilities, does everything for you. It's not a rule, but many times something that is more flexible and can do more things for you requires a higher skill set because it's necessarily more complex. That's not a rule, though. I don't put it up here as one of these metrics because you can actually design things that are complex and flexible but also easy to use. So it can vary. So I just decided to leave it at skills. Any questions about those three models? Does this concept of model make sense? Because I struggled with this in my mind for how to, you know, what word to use. Model is a word that gets used in all that academic-y stuff that I used to sit in before I got a real job. So, lenses. So, who is going to be looking and working with this system, either through the evaluation process or through when you're actually using it? So I came up with four good categories, I think. Professional communicators, these are the folks that are who work in your communications office. They're the ones that are responsible for the content on your site. End users, delegates. These are people that have to go in and update content, but are not necessarily professional communicators. They might have 100 other jobs, but they have to go in and add new pages or add events, change numbers on pages periodically, you know, when number of publication count goes up for a faculty member, something like that. Programmers and integrators, depending on your site, your staff, you might have people that are responsible for integrating content on this server or on this website with other administrative systems, like your HR systems or your faculty data systems or any number of other systems. So those folks are going to look at the system differently than the end users and the professional communicators. And then you have IT people. I separate out IT and programmers. IT is the folks who, in the case of a piece of software that you buy and install on your servers, these are the folks who are going to ask you, well, how many servers do you need? Do you need a database server? How much memory does it have to have? Is this going to have to stay up all the time, or is it going to go down? Those are the things that they're worried about. They're worried less about how the software works. They're more worried about what resources they need to allocate for it. There are other lenses that I'm not really going to talk about today, but that are important for a discussion of buying a large product that is going to cost a decent amount of money up front and then cost a lot of institutional time over the years that it's in use. The executives, they want to know things like, how much does this cost? I'm not really going to worry about that today. I'm going to assume that figuring out how and asking questions about how this product works and what its features are what you're worried about. And then once you figure that out, then you go tell the people who have to pay for it. Purchasing, cost, politics, existing investment. This framework can be used, in my opinion, for evaluating your existing system. So you can see against what your needs are. You might not If you're not asking questions in a structured manner, it might be hard to see why people are frustrated with it. So you've got lenses and models, and you can put that together into a matrix where you can then, we'll talk a little bit about this in a second, you can take a feature like RSS or a property like it's scalable, whatever that means, and say, well, if you look at it's scalable from the web ecosystem model, that probably means it has a lot of throughput. It can handle a lot of content, to handle content quickly. The professional communicators, you know, they're not really going to, you know, it's scalable. They just really care that it's all working all the time. But the IT folks are going to ask questions. Well, is this something we install on our servers? Do we have to get licenses for Windows or whatever questions they might have? If you look at scalability from a software stack perspective, you might not necessarily be interested in, does it have a lot of throughput? You might say, okay, is this something that can support lots of different access methods? And then skills required. Some vendors are software as a service, where it would require almost no skills to keep it scalable. The skill is pick up the phone, call the vendor, why isn't it fast? That's how you get it more scalable. And of course, there can be more models. There can be more lenses. So any questions so far on that? Does that make sense? So the vocabulary portion I want to talk a little bit about is, one of the premises of this was you look at either open source software's websites or a vendor's website, and they'll have a list of bullet points of what it can do. And they'll use adjectives like powerful, usable, scalable. And they're all right. Well, I suppose they're usually right. I suppose they could be lying. But we're just going to assume that they're right. But it means right within in a particular context. Because they've made decisions in the product's development that impacts whether or not it's scalable in certain, in what we were looking at before, this matrix, from one of these different perspectives. So before you start, let's talk about this nouns versus adjectives thing. So in the rest of this, I want to talk about a feature or capability as a noun in a system, such as it does RSS, or it does facilitates content reuse, or it has blogging capabilities, versus an adjective property. It's powerful, it's easy to use, scalable. So you take all these words that you've come up with about your needs, or you've gone to websites and you see all these features that people talk about, or you have your customers have come to you and said, we need this. And you can establish a virtual, I guess you don't have to put it out in paper, but maybe it's a good exercise, a whole stack of those matrices where you've collected for each of these nouns or adjectives. You've made sure you've sought out people who can look at the system from one of those perspectives, three times four different perspectives. And once you have that, you can hopefully have not forgotten the right questions to ask, not forgotten for each of those features all the different perspectives that are involved. And you'll have this whole huge collection where you can hopefully, maybe, think more critically about your needs, what's really important. But what I think is the most important thing that will come out of this is that if you do a good job of this, it'll be blatantly obvious the things you're giving up with each particular product and their approach. And of course, this won't tell you what to pick. Like I said, it's not a meat grinder. everybody's got different needs. All the products have different perspectives and capabilities. So what I want to spend, I think we're about 20 minutes in or so, I want to spend the rest of the time. I think it's a pretty simple model. Spend the rest of the time talking about a feature or a set of features that you guys need, what you've been using, how you might answer it from those different perspectives, and get people talking about, well, I'm a programmer, so I care about whether it's got APIs. You know, what do you think the communicators care about that? You as a programmer might say, well, if it doesn't have APIs, it makes it very difficult for me to integrate that other system that you have over there with your list of email addresses from Alumni Affairs. And so now the communicator understands, hopefully, because you put it in their, from if you framed it in their perspective, why it might be good to choose a product with APIs, even though this other product over here that doesn't have good APIs looks prettier to them. You know, it's easier to enter content. So there are some topics up there. I'd like people to either look at them and say, I think we should talk about that. Or just sit there and say, well, we think you're full of it, and just go keep on talking for another 15 minutes. Anybody?
John?
Not at all.
And you're just looking for examples of features that might be important.
Right. So that we can walk through an execution of filling out this matrix.
Sure. I've got one.
Okay.
Just based on my experience with content management systems that is often lacking. And I know that our users are going to insist on this. Needs to have a very easy to use menu building system. Often it's easy to add content like an add page or add post. But it's not very straightforward how to tell the content management system where to put it.
So like the navigation generation, for instance.
Building navigation, and then finding that content once they've created it, finding and managing the content.
Okay. So to repeat for the recording and everybody else, what John mentioned was, hey, the CMS that he uses, or whatever you're talking about, I'll just, for example, I'll say the one that he uses, he's had users complain that, hey, we can create a new page, no problem, but where exactly does it fit in the information architecture of the site? So from a software stack model, I would start asking questions like, well, am I writing to the file system? Am I writing to some sort of web interface that that describes where these things are organized in a hierarchical fashion? Is it folders? Is there a metaphor like that? From a skills required perspective, I might think about it in terms of, do I have to think in advance? Am I forced into deciding where in the information architecture to put that file? Do you have to come up with this proverbial information architecture in the first place before, you know, does somebody who's designing this site have to establish what that IA is before all these other pages are added? So if you're talking about ongoing maintenance, or if you're talking about original site creation. From the communicator's perspective, I think that's all from the kind of the communicator's perspective. Do we have to do work up front? Do we have to control the information architecture? Do we want to control the information architecture? And contributors, they're going to look at it and say, well, do I have to, when I know I want to create this page, do I have to have all this information when I start and have to know it up front? Or could I kind of create a page, let it sit there before it's published or whatever the term is? Can I make it a work in progress? Or do I have to know, or is it going to enforce me to fill out a lot of predetermined information before I can actually make the page? Sometimes you want that, sometimes you don't. Programmers, they're probably going to ask questions like, is it a strict hierarchy, like an XML document where you've got a tree, everything starts at the top, or is it more like a graph, like a social graph where you've got these nodes over here that they all interconnect? Is it automatically generated? or you have to write custom code to automatically generate it. I know the product that Cornell uses has a built-in hierarchical automatically generated navigation, but if you want to do anything more sophisticated than that, you have to write custom code. IT administrators, they probably don't care about that particular one. Can you think of anybody else who might have a skin in that game, for instance, a proverbial skin in that game? Can anybody else think about any other way to look at the concept of the content management system that would, other than those three models, that might illuminate this issue of easy insertion in navigation menus? So, okay, no pressure, just, you know. Let's do one or two more, so you can kind of get the idea of. Yeah. Sure. Okay. Does anybody else want to kind of do what I did by looking at it from different perspectives for content repurposing? Because I'm just one, like I said, I'm a programmer. I can only guess what content creators really think about that kind of thing. But I can say things and then get feedback from people. Okay. So, content reuse. So the one thing that I would add to that was looking at it from, that's from the, the last one you talked about there might be from the communicator, the pro communicator's perspective. They want to write this copy in one place and have it show up in different places, but they want to make sure it's got the same voice and the correct grammar and everything that pro communicators want that we programmers are like, yeah, whatever. It's just text. It looks like lorem ipsum to me, right? Yeah. I'm just kidding. I've got. I see my content people aren't here. Yes, this is good. The one thing that comes to my mind there, though, is okay. Does this system have an ability to, if you've delegated control for this website widely in your organization, how does that content writer who's updating that one bit of reused content know where it's used everywhere? That might be a question I'd ask. Is there feedback in the system where in its master location it could list, here are the five other locations that it's being used? Because I've seen when that kind of content reuse gets used, at least in the programmer world, here's the problem that happens. You build a piece of software that you've got three problems you're trying to solve, and you figure out one solution that fits those three. And then you add in another problem, and you go and adjust the solution, except it screws it up for one of the other ones. So maybe this copy only works if in these three sites right now, and if you were to change some verbiage on it, it wouldn't make sense in some fourth site that you added later. The programmer integrator perspective, I want to ask, how am I querying that information? Can I pull that out into an RSS feed? Can I have those snippets created from another source? News integration system is a common one. You might have, in a large place like Cornell, we've got our central news service, and they produce RSS feeds of our news stories, and we want to publish them on our website. So if I tie that back into this framework, what I would say is you're observing that problem. You don't have control over that process, but you're the IT person seeing this as a problem. You could answer all these questions, maybe add a few different lenses or add another couple models, and then sit down with the folks who are, let's say, not to be mean, but those print folks, you know, those folks who just do printing stuff. Does anybody use print anymore? I'm just kidding. Very just kidding, because I know it's still very valuable. But this is a web conference after all. And you'd say, well, look, here is here are the ramifications of approaching it from a Photoshop InDesign perspective to start. What are your costs associated with not doing it in this alternate way? And maybe it actually makes more sense for the organization to do it that way. But nobody's been presented with this, okay, here's how this looks from other perspectives. That, like with a car, an automobile, there are different ways to look at that. It's a system of components that are all working together, or it's just a car that gets you from place to place. In a content management system, it almost always is not just a single piece of software that you go and you install and you're done, and it produces a bunch of websites, and that's it. It's got to get content from somewhere. Is that all manually entered? Is that all being drawn automatically or manually from other systems? And then it's producing things. So it outputs web pages that may be used by other systems, maybe crawled by Google, maybe a different mobile version of the of these web pages. The reason I chose the term ecosystem is that in a natural ecosystem, you have let's say carbon dioxide and oxygen. You have oxygen gets consumed by people, produces carbon dioxide, which then gets consumed by plants, which then get eaten by people. So you've got this cycle. Everything kind of fits together. The web is very much like that as well. You've got either the CMS, or you've got the CMS and your other CMSs on campus, or you've got your campus and then all the other campuses and systems out there. Or you can look down at a very small level inside a CMS and say, well, I'm keying things in, and then I'm spitting it out the other end. They all consume and interconnect. Does that at all make any sense? I think every CMS is an example of this CMS. The one that we use at Cornell, for instance, has the ability to do manual content entry. It has the ability to run processes and suck in information from RSS feeds. It has other bubbles that I didn't put up here. For instance, it's one of the products that you have to install on a server and run, and it actually can do extra things that a publish type CMS can't out of the box, like do user identification and login, because it's not a static web server. It's running this content management system and publishing service all right in one. Does that answer your question? I know that you do. Okay. Well, let me give you an example. I know that some of the pages on the Animal Science website are hand maintained, or at least were. Dreamweaver? Okay. So to a certain extent, that hand maintenance is in and of itself a content management system. The storage medium is your file system, and the access tools are Dreamweaver or Notepad, and you going in and making changes and keying stuff up. So in that sense, the CMS here is the file system, and you add photography to it, and then it produces websites. It doesn't do other things like feeds and widgets, but you don't necessarily need that. All right, thank you all.